Well, good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday at 11 o'clock. It must be time for the Dirtbag, and indeed it is. Good morning, Glenn Andreessen, and here beside you now, along with Jim Gilbert of One Green World. Jim, welcome back.
Good morning.
As usual. Jim. And all the way from the picturesque suburbs of Tigard or Tualatin. Excuse me, it's Lisa Albert. Our favorite garden writer.
Well, thank you.
Welcome to the Dirtbag.
I'm honored to be a guest dirtbag today.
Yes. Our topic at hand is container gardening and edibles, or edible containable. I was thinking about this, you know, should we say edible container gardening? And that means like you could eat the container.
Now, that would be awesome if it was chocolate.
But we're going to be talking about that topic. After some announcements, Lisa will be with us for the first half hour and maybe beyond if she has the time. We'll open up the phones for your questions at about 11:30. And boy, there could be lots of them.
It's an interesting subject.
And it's, this time of year, or this year particularly, is like no other, at least as far as the first 80-degree day. Haven't had any yet, and we won't probably till Saturday. And so that will be the latest time ever, at least since they've been keeping records, that we've reached 80 degrees here in the Portland area.
It's pouring up the way up here. And, yesterday, we worked out in the fields till 7:30. Another one of these days where you just try to get all you can get in before the next rainstorm comes.
That's right. All right. Jim, what are you going to be doing? Let's go. We have some announcements of garden tours and other things that are going on. We'll take care of that first.
Yeah. Well, since it's rained so much, it now has to get nice. And since it's going to get nice, the normal garden show season is kind of over, you know, up and down the Willamette Valley. We go back and forth, Eugene to Portland and all over the place. And now we get to go to the beach.
Ah.
There's actually two garden shows at the Oregon coast coming up. So this is a great opportunity to take advantage of the upcoming great weather, which we all know is going to happen. You can head down to Tillamook. That's actually coming up on the 19th, Saturday the 19th, to an event called Spade and Wade.
Oh, how's that?
That's a great name.
It's a pretty funky little event at the Pioneer Courthouse or Pioneer Museum, I guess it is called, in Tillamook. They have a bunch of nurseries will be there, including One Green World. Plants will be for sale. There's also a farmer's market there at the same time. And you can also, you know, of course, Tillamook, you know, you can go to the two cheese factories, sample cheese, and then head to the beach for a nice walk or whatever you'd like to do.
For the waiting part.
For the waiting part.
You take care of the spade.
The spade part. And the following weekend in Newport, we'll be gardening on the edge. And that's, I think, I don't know, the second or third year that this has been happening at the Newport Middle School from 9 to 5 p.m. And by the way, the Spade and Wade is 9 to 5 p.m. We'll have seminars. Mike Darcy's going to be down there doing his garden show from Newport. It's kind of a cool deal. In fact, I'll be giving a seminar at 1:30 on growing fruit, and I'll love to talk about folks how to grow fruit near the coast as well as in the valley.
That's got its own challenges, we'll say.
Yeah. So go to the beach, hang out, have some fun.
June's not necessarily a bad time at the beach. July and August can be, you know, that we get the clouds are more prevalent there on those months than they are in the valley. Yeah. But then September comes and it's nice in the beach.
Yeah.
But June's good too.
June's good too.
Lisa, tell us about, you've been very involved with this garden tour for the Tigard. You tell us about it.
Well, it's for the Foundation for Tigard Tualatin Schools. All benefits go to that program. And this is its fifth year. And just in case you can't make it to the beach the same weekend, our event is local, and so it's a lot closer to home.
And it's 2 days.
It's 2 days. The art show is 2 days. The art show is the Friday, the June 25th, from noon to 8.
That's what I was looking at.
And then Saturday from 9 to 3, and that's at Fowler Middle School. And then the garden tour, and there's no admission charge to the art show, and there's about 40 artists. And then the garden tour, the tickets are $20, and it's 8 private gardens in Tigard and Tualatin. And there's a lot of gardens with edibles, either mixed in or a separate edible bed, which is great. People are really into that this year. For more information, they can call 503-431-4024. Or if they Google Seeding Our Future, which is the name of our event, it's the first site to pop up.
I'll bet
and
you.
And there's lots and lots of information. Oh, and I'm talking, too, at the art show.
Oh, you are?
I am.
About art?
I'm talking about art, actually, on Saturday. And then on Friday, I'm talking about native plants, which you know is one of my specialties, and attracting wildlife to the garden.
Oh, excellent. Now, if you email me that information, I'll post it on the KBOO website.
I'll do it the minute I get home.
Can access it from there.
Sure, and I'll send you information about the two events at the coast, and also people can go to the One Green World website and get the links to that information, too.
So. Yeah, I think they need to do cloning so we can be everywhere at once.
Boy. Well, there's so much fun, actually. You know,
there is.
I love seeing, and you get to see folks you've seen before at some other show and talk shop and, you know.
See how their trees are doing.
How their gardens.
In fact, Lisa was ecstatic, I would say, that she has how many apples?
24 on my golden colonnade. If I get the
Scarlet Golden Sentinel.
Golden Sentinel. It's a columnar apple golden sentinel. Yeah. And I am thrilled.
Yeah.
That's is it in a container?
It is in a container.
Well, unfortunately, we can't segue right to that right now because I have one more announcement here. A couple of garden tours. These by bicycle. Somebody toured my garden last week and dropped off this tour here. And this fellow is putting together a couple of garden tours as payback for his master gardener training. Pretty nice thinking on that, I think. Yeah. There, one first one is called Urban Learning to Garden Tour. And this starts at the Urban Farm Store on Belmont, 2100 Southeast Belmont. And this is on June 12th. That's coming right up here. And let's see, you can get more information by emailing Jeff Bernards. Why don't we do that? And his email address, oh boy, I'm going to have to put this on my website too, or the KBOO website, ytamer@aol.com. So I'll give you that again, ytamer@aol.com. And he's got another tour on June 20th, which must be a Sunday or something
that. It's Sunday. It's Father's Day.
Father's Day.
It's Father's
Yes.
Day.
Yes. This is Gardening Styles Explored. You meet at on Southeast 76th at a garden. It might be his garden there. And just email him and you'll get more information on that. Okay.
Great.
Any more announcements from you two? No. Okay. All right. You guys are the well-versed in the container gardening, or at least Lisa is well-versed in writing about the container gardening. How this all came about is I asked Jim for some, what are we going to talk about on Wednesday? And Jim suggested container gardening. That led to his suggestion that maybe Rosemarie Nichols, who's the owner or co-owner, at least, of Nichols Seed Company in Albany, who has written a book on container gardening. Is that not correct,
yep,
Jim?
Yep, The Bountiful Container.
There it is right there.
Yep.
But she was not available to do it this week.
So I'm second best? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that at all. And so she will be joining us, however, for our August show. And that will be taped because I'll be out of town. And we'll record that next month. Next month, by the way, just as a preview here, we've got Bruce Nelson, horticultural instructor at Clackamas Community College, but he will be in to talk about a rainwater catchment seminar that's going to be happening in August.
Fabulous.
Big two-day thing.
Great subject.
You know, yeah. So
got plenty of that water.
That's right.
Especially lately.
So that's in July. Rosemarie Nichols will be talking about I like Jim's suggestion here, the seed business, being in the seed business, what's that all entails. And, of course, we'll touch about her container gardening, too. But then I was thinking, well, who else do I know that does container gardening? And then it came to me that Lisa wrote a fine article in one of the April issues of the the Oregonian's Home and Garden section.
Mm-hmm.
Homes and Garden Northwest, I guess they call it now. And I thought it would be good to have her perspective, having researched this as a somewhat beginner container edible gardener.
Definitely.
Long-time gardener.
A long-time gardener, but more ornamental and natives and wildlife habitat. Edibles, I'm definitely new at.
So her perspective will be invaluable, I think, with this discussion. And then we'll counter out that with counteract that with Jim's vast experience in growing things in pots to begin. So
thousands and thousands of plants, but it's a very interesting discussion because on a home level, and the way we want to, we'll talk more about this, but creating a mix that's sustainable and organic is something that we're
a potting mix.
A potting mix.
Yeah,
that's the future and something we would like to we're working on. So.
Well, that's a good place to start our discussion because that's the soil that the plant is going to have to live with for the next 3 or 4 months.
Well, what I learned with the research for the article is what we provide for them in a container, the food, the water, the soil, that is all those plants get, and it's so critical.
And you hit the nail on the head as to the difficulty is that you provide everything.
We provide everything.
Pretty much all of their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So when veggies and fruits are planted in the earth, they get the benefit of rain, beneficial organisms.
It's more challenging.
Debris. Indeed.
But the benefits, if you have only a patio or a small, for me, most of my sun is on my big patio, and I want to cover it.
Yeah.
So containers work perfectly.
All right. So, Lisa, you start about what did you come up with for potting soil? What did the experts tell you?
What did the experts tell me? There is a difference of opinion, as there is in any part of gardening, absolutely. And basically, if people start with a good potting mix, they're off to a good start. If you know more about plants and you know a little bit more about plant science and all the things that go into it, you can create your own mixes, mixing certain percentages of peat moss or bark dust, I guess you call it, perlite or vermiculite or whatever you want to put in there. But you kind of have to know a plant's needs, whether it's acidic, it needs well-draining soil. So that gets a little complicated.
And
keep it simple.
And let me just interject here in that we're differentiating between the plant starting mix and potting soil that's going to be there for that's going to be there forever. So
I'm not talking about seed starting at all. I'm talking about
So the mix that you're going to be growing your plants in for months or years is different than just a seed starting medium.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it will be different for, a permanent plant like I have the columnar apple in a container that's going to be there for a while. Now, as it grows, I'll repot it and that'll give me a chance to refresh it. But it's not like if I grow a tomato in a pot and it's new soil every year.
I was just out at Joy Creek Nursery a couple of weeks ago and Morris, the co-owner there, said that he does his soil in pots every 3 years.
He does.
Yeah, just
Well, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
It wears out.
It gets used up,
It gets compacted. It just doesn't look as good.
Right. Jim, what do you start with now? I know you're working on the ultimate.
Yeah, it's a really big issue for us because there's two criteria that are important to us. One is that the material be organic-based, it's not fossil fuel based, and that gets away from artificial fertilizer, which is from fossil fuel. And the second criteria is that it's as local as possible. So the material we use isn't being trucked for thousands of miles. So when you start making those two requirements, then you can start saying, okay, well, what can we use that's local? Already what we do right now is we use bark, which there's lots of bark in the Northwest. Thankfully, so that's a pretty reasonable material to use, and one of the important things is you want to use fairly coarse bark because you want it to drain well. Sawdust essentially or fairly fine material will hold too much water, so you want some good drainage. The second piece is adding some kind of coarse, rocky-type material. Now, you can use gravel, but it's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we found to be the most economical and local material is pumice, since we are fortunate to live, or unfortunate, depending upon where you are at that moment, in a volcanic region, we can get pumice from eastern Oregon. So that's so we use pumice and we use bark. And then the third piece is something a little bit finer for the roots to grow into. In the past, you've used peat. That's typically what is available for that. There's a new material made from coconut coir, C-O-I-R. We're going to experiment with washed dairy manure, which is actually, of course, there's dairies, and there's quite a bit of that material. They look for places to take it to. So that's kind of the three things. One is the original material, the main stuff, which we call, which is bark. The second thing is the drainage that helps the drainage, which is the rocky material, which we use pumice. And the third is a more fine material. And so that's in our potting mix right now. That's what we use. Mm-hmm. The second part is the fertilizer. What those things that we just talked about are pretty inert. I mean, they're just the structure by which that holds the roots.
Mm-hmm.
Then how does the plant get nutrients? And what we're trying to get away from is that fossil fuel-based fertilizer. So there is no cookbook yet on what to do. There's some reasonable materials out there that we think are going to work well. There's a place called Stutzman's Dairy. They actually not a dairy, but they produce a fertilizer made from chicken manure, composted chicken manure. And they're located not far from us, actually. They make a pelleted fertilizer that you can add to this potting soil.
Would that be like the fish fertilizer pellets then? Or
it's similar, but it's made from chicken manure. So it's really locally sourced. Mm-hmm. And fish is great too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're experimenting with, how much to put in. But typically the recommendation would be like a quarter of a pound for a fruit tree in a pot. Add that to that. And it's fairly long lasting. There are, of course, other fertilizers like blood meal, bone meal, that have different traits and long-lasting, which you want, of course, for a pot. A long-term fruit tree is going to grow in a pot for a while. You want to use something that's going to last for a while,
mm-hmm.
not something that's going to just be done in a few weeks. So,
Lisa, what would you recommend people start with then for vegetables? Say they want to grow a tomato on their deck.
You're teasing me on something I haven't researched yet.
Uh-oh.
He promised you wouldn't put me on the spot.
No. Well, I'm just wondering then.
I were starting, you mean a tomato in a container?
Well, would you go to the store and buy a bag of organic potting soil? And would that,
yes.
Would you think that would be sufficient to
I
get your
I think for
tomato?
The most part, yes. I mean, if you can make anything as geeky as you want. And there are certain things that I do like to go to the nth degree because that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for a lot of basic beginners, there's some good potting mixes out there, organic potting mixes you can start with. And then maybe as you get to know the plants more, you get to know how things fare in your containers. After you do it a couple of years, you'll get to finesse that.
All right.
I like to keep it simple because I like people to have success
yeah.
and continue. And if it's too complicated, they're not going to
right.
go there.
So it's our collective opinion that some of these organic potting soils
mm-hmm.
may have enough nutrients to support a tomato for one season?
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay,
no.
So they're going to have to add something else
yes.
To that. And we'll do that after our first musical break. And this is in honor of Lisa. I chose this one.
Oh, you did.
Yeah.
Of a time.
This is Glenn Andreessen with the Dirt Bag here with Lady Rider Lisa Albert and orchardist Jim Gilbert. We want to continue with our discussion about what to do with the potting soil, either before or after you plant your vegetables. In this case, as we talk about fertilizing maybe. Mm-hmm. So, what did you find out about that? I mean, you said everybody has their own opinion.
Everybody has their own opinion, which is gardening. It's not an exact science.
Sure.
I think the sum up is that, you know, adding a little bit of compost or kelp meal, or I like to use worm castings in with a potting soil help, especially if it's a permanent planting, and then adding.
You're suggesting mixing this all together before you plant?
Or I added the worm composting one time on top, and it worked just fine. As far as the rest of the fertilizers, it's because it's, you know, you're watering regularly and the nutrients are washing out. Even if they're, you know, organic, they're lower concentration, they're still going to leach out of the soil because that's where the water goes. So they suggested watering or not, doing it at like a quarter concentration and watering it or using it, you know, more often.
If it was like a 1/4 of it four times.
Right. So if it was like a monthly treatment, you'd, instead of doing a cup monthly, I'm just throwing these numbers out because I have no idea, but you do a quarter cup every week.
Right.
So
whereas outside, the recommendation would be all at once, band it around, scratch it into the soil.
And right. That would... Yeah, it's not going to go as far in a ground as it will in a container.
Okay. I think this might be a good time to go for the garden stumper. Yes, Jim, we already have one.
Okay. I thought you were going to stump me then, too.
Okay, Lisa, we talked about this beforehand, and this has to do, this is, you know, you got a 50% chance on this, you know, if you're going to answer it.
Yeah, you do.
But that's okay. So our garden stumper today has to do with container gardening, and what is the current recommendation as far as what you can fill us in?
Do you put gravel in the base of your container for drainage, or do you not?
That's it. Simple
that's
as that.
It.
So if you have the answer to that, you got a 1 in 2 chance here.
Hey, that's better than the lottery.
True. Mm-hmm. 503, what is it, 287, I wrote this down someplace. 231-8187, 503-231-8187. Okay, so we'll continue on from there. Jim, when do you add fertilizer or nutrients?
Well, it was interesting to me that while we were playing the music, we almost couldn't turn the music off because we were having such a hot discussion about this. So I think it's really a very super interesting subject. I was mentioning that, we're a plant factory, so we have several requirements. One is that the plants, we want a consistent product to come, and we don't mess around with that. I mean, we don't like play a little bit different this, different that. I mean, we wanted to make sure that everything comes out looking good and all, but... for the homeowner, you can purchase organic fertilizer that's already blended different ingredients, and I've had good experience with that. You mix that in before you plant, and then the interesting part comes if you use that, for example, which is a simple way to do it. So you get a good organic potting soil, which is going to give you that base material for the roots to grow in, and then you add organic fertilizer. Black gold, for example, makes organic fertilizer. According to label directions, mix it in with your potting soil. That'll give you growth for several months. Mm-hmm. But then eventually you're going to have to add something to it to keep it growing longer. Now you can add that fertilizer on the top dressing, or you can use the pelletized chicken manure or fish meal. You can use liquid to add to that to keep the plant growing well. But that's sort of the right now, I think, the as you call it, state of the art, which is as best as we know how to do it on an organic level.
Well, I think the growers have a little bit better advantage than home gardeners, too, of growing in containers because that's what your business is. And when I was trying to find an alternative to, can I say it on the air, the other product, Osmocote.
Oh, sure.
Which is, you know, it's probably the least of the baddies out there, but still I was trying to move away from that. I had a hard time finding good information about organic fertilizers for containers. It was a little difficult. So I think there's still kind of some we're at the head of the curve, maybe? Do you feel that too?
Absolutely. And I'm just hoping that there will be some movement, that the Oregon State, for example, will get more into doing this. This would be great. This is the kind of thing we need to have some support with because it's hard for small businesses to do that kind of research as to what works. But it's important, very, very important issue, I would believe.
Okay, it's time to get – Judith is going to take a shot at the question of the do we or do we not add gravel to the base of a container for drainage.
Well, I like the odds. I think we do.
Oh! Judith, maybe in your youth, just like my youth, that was recommended.
It was always done.
Yes.
It was. And same
and
with –
the plants are beautiful.
Oh, just wait, though, without that gravel. Go ahead, Lisa.
It was common practice for a long time to do that because it was thought, well, gravel would help with drainage. But what they've discovered with studies is that it actually stops water. The water moves through the particles, and as the particle sizes change from potting soil to gravel, it actually stops water. So you're better off without the gravel in the bottom of the pot.
But we will need a drainage hole.
Absolutely you need a drainage hole. Yeah, okay. You don't want it just sitting there.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, see, that's why we use this as a stumper today, because things change.
Oh, yeah. And it's not been that long that it changed. So don't feel bad. It's still kind of getting out there, and a lot of people still don't know that.
And you know, Judith, the prize is the same whether you get it right or wrong.
I didn't even know that.
Okay, so but thanks for calling, Judith.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
I would like to make a little segue there with that issue about drainage, because to me that's probably one of the biggest issues in growing things in containers is making sure that there's good drainage and watering. And I'm sure that Lisa, you would agree with me that that too much water is almost more of a problem typically with people that grow plants in containers than too little.
Especially with lemons, with citrus.
Yes.
They need to be dry in between.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And
unlike tomatoes, for example.
Yes.
And if you grow citrus in Oregon, of course, most people bring it indoors in the winter if you want it to survive. You see this beautiful little green plant there and you think, I should water it. But if you do that and you do that frequently, you will cause root rot and plant failure. And I read an interesting little comment recently about saying, you know, use that tool that there's a tool that we all have with us all of the time, and it's called our finger.
Yeah.
And check the soil, you know, and don't water it. If it's moist, leave it alone because it won't need it.
Well, I was also told you could check by temperature too. I think it was something about room temperature. Do you know that one or just by moisture?
I only know moisture.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, that's my rule of doing that. But that's I think I've heard of more people having problems with their plants from overwatering. And of course, as you said earlier, that plant in that pot is your baby.
Mm-hmm.
There's no nature there that's going to take care of it. So if you underwater it or overwater it or over-fertilize it or under-fertilize it, I mean, you're in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And if you leave it during the summer and expect your neighbor to come over and take care of it, you want to check once in a while.
Neighbor.
Call them once in a while.
You could always set up drip system. And Kim McCorney has talked quite a bit about drip systems, and I think that if you Google her name and drip system, you probably will come up to one of her articles. But that's what I would do.
I hope to cover that topic next month, along with the rainwater catchment and just other irrigation systems from the home garden.
Kind of takes the human error out of the equation if you can set up a drip system to water the containers the way that you need to and how much they need.
And this would be with a timer to turn.
Timer. So then you can go away and not worry about your neighbor forgetting to take care of your vegetables.
Yeah. There's nothing more depressing than to come home and see your beautiful plants all brown and crispy.
Oh, yeah.
So what are these plants that are suitable for container gardening? We'll take another musical break and come back and talk about that afterwards. You're listening to The Dirt Bag.
Thank you.
That's Homegrown from Booker T and the MGs. Distinct sound. You probably already knew that. Maybe not. Okay, so what are our choices here for planting in containers? Or what are good choices? What do people have success on? And if you have other questions besides what Pear has for us, give us a call at that same number, 503-231-8187. That's it. Pear, you're up.
Can't hear anything.
Oh, we can hear you, though.
Okay, I got a question.
Are you here in our studio here?
I got a lot of asparagus in my...
I see.
Leeks in my garden. They grow up everywhere. And I'm trying to get them nice and fat like they sell in the stores, but if you let them grow, they get a little bulb at the end, and then they get very woody inside.
What are you talking about leeks here or asparagus?
Leeks.
Oh, okay. Well, they're biennials, so they don't last forever. So you have to get them big early or harvest them before they get that big.
Hmm.
And the key with alliums in general is to make sure that they get lots of green soon. And then they'll bulb up after that.
You cut the bulbs off?
No. Oh, you just want them before they start really forming those stalks. I mean, with onions, it's pretty obvious that, you know, you get lots of green growth. Then that will lead to the bulb being larger. And with leeks, it's a little different than that. But when do you plant them, first of all?
Because
there's two times that you can really plant them, or you can plant them almost year-round, it seems.
Well, sort of year-round. They've gone over the winter.
Right, but they start. They will start bolting then now or a month or so ago, and that's when they start turning woody. So your task is to get them bigger before they bolt.
I see. How do you do that now?
Plant them sooner.
Okay.
I mean, really, that sounds a little flippant, but if you plant them in March as opposed to June, or then they'll be bigger sooner. You can harvest them in the fall. If you plant them in by May, you can have them for Thanksgiving dinner.
Okay. Well, all right.
Okay.
I got time for one more little question?
I guess so.
What about raspberries that got little buds on them, but the buds never turn into berries?
What time of year are you talking about? Now?
Yeah. Well, they got the little buds now, but I don't know if they'll ever turn into berries later in the summer.
Well, those may not. But others will.
Hmm.
You need. It could be a pollination thing. It could be just a weather thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think all bets are off this year.
Yeah, I think so.
For timing, anyway. So
okay, thanks.
All right, you bet. Okay, so Jim, what is appropriate fruit to grow in containers?
Well, for the easiest ones are obviously ones that don't grow fast. They're low vigor, more dwarfing. So, you know, of course, apples. You know,
and what size pot, too, I'd like you to address.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, you can start off with a 5-gallon pot if you want, something that's reasonable enough to fit the root system of the plant you're putting in. Typically, people like to go, attractive pots are nice. You can go a 15-gallon pot. You can half a whiskey barrel. It's a pretty typical nice plant for a nice pot for your deck. And that'll last for a number of years, depending upon the plant that's in it. If you take an apple, for example, a columnar apple is really easy to grow in a pot. And Elisa had some.
Well, if I can do it, anybody can do it.
They're slow growing. They don't get big. They don't branch out. They bear a lot of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about a dwarf
standard apple?
You know, or like an M26 or a P22?
Yeah,
are those appropriate for pots?
Yes. Yes, and M26 is a dwarfing rootstock, which is makes a really nice potted plant. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about an M26 is it's got a decent enough root system that you don't it won't fall over typically. Some of the other ones you have to stake.
P22 you would want to stake.
There's M27 which has to be staked,
but not the columnar apple.
Columnar apple doesn't need that.
Yeah.
It's a stocky little bugger and just stands right up.
Okay,
and,
so that's important.
Yeah,
a distinction. I mean, you may think, well, I can stake it up, but part of it is, well, what's going to actually hold that tree up when you put your stake in the ground?
Right.
I mean, the stake may move. because you just have potting soil in there. It's not like you can pound it deeper and deeper and deeper till it gets strong.
That's right. That's right. So apples use a dwarf fruit stock if you want to grow apples in a pot. When you think about some of the other fruits, some don't have really good dwarfing root stocks. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to grow a plum in a pot, for example, you can do it, but it's going to take more work. You're going to have to, you can grow it for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, but then you'll have to take it out of the pot, probably, depending on how big it gets, and prune the roots back and repot it, which can be done.
It can be done. That's right.
You know, there are pretty dedicated gardeners out there that are willing to do that kind of stuff. So
the trick is to pick the right container. You want the mouth to be wider than the base or anywhere else. Because if you have a vase or an urn-shaped pot, you're going to have a dickens of a time
can't pull that root ball out there.
It's pretty, but no, it won't
practical.
Work. Not practical.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's better to maybe put the plant in a pot and then put that in a decorative.
That's a great solution.
And then there are plants like pineapple guava, which are really beautiful evergreen shrubs, small shrubs that you can grow on a deck and patio and have an evergreen plant year-round.
And the flowers are delicious.
Aren't they good?
They are. They're like candy sweet.
Yeah. Figs, especially the less vigorous ones like Latarula or Negroni are really good for container culture. Of course, berries. Blueberries are very happy in pots.
And, of course, strawberries would be fine virtually in most pots larger than 2 gallons maybe.
Right. There's another consideration, and maybe this is early to talk about this, but I'll just mention it. One of the other issues when you grow any kind of plant in a pot in the wintertime, if you've got it on your patio and we have a winter like we just had where temperatures drop down below freezing and stay down below freezing for several days, the big danger then is that the pot will freeze and turn into a big ice cube. And when that happens, then the temperature of the roots starts going down below where it's safe. When the pot itself gets below freezing, below 32 degrees, then root damage can occur. So you've got to be careful about that. And if you've got it out there on the patio or deck, wrap it up with something. Mm-hmm. Put some insulate it if it gets that cold. Now, it doesn't happen often, thankfully.
But yeah, well, it has for the last 2 winters, however.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that was a disgusting look you gave us.
Yeah. So basically, as I said, we grow almost all of the plants we grow in the nursery, we grow in the ground and in pots. And so we've observed how they grow.
Yeah,
just remember that if a plant is going to grow big, it's going to grow big in the pot too, and it's going to require repotting and some manipulation.
Lisa, any other plants you want to add to that list?
Well, I think when I researched for the article, what I found was interesting, and I didn't realize it as, new to edible gardening, especially to fruit trees, was that the rootstock is important, but so is the variety you buy, that there's naturally dwarfing varieties of fruits that you can buy, the peaches and the nectarines. And I think there was, I'm trying to remember now from my notes, but I can't. If you Google, actually, if you go to my website, Lisa Albert Writer, as in WRITER, you can find the article, and that's probably the easiest way to get there. But I thought that was interesting, that matching those two, not just looking at the variety on top of what it's planted on, was really the key to success for a container. And as you said, the larger they grow, the more work they are. I mean, you can do it, but you are making a big commitment, and I would rather start with something that's going to be dwarf long-term, that, it still might eventually be 8 to 10 feet if I have a big enough pot for it, but it's still somewhat manageable. Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to point out was that, and I don't know how this was for this year because we had rain for so long, the tip I liked was peach trees, to bring them in undercover to avoid the peach tree leaf curl. Mm-hmm. And you can do that in a container. Mm-hmm. Kind of hard to do that in the ground.
Yeah. Without building a roof over it
or something. Yeah. Well, my neighbors already think I'm crazy, so.
Yeah.
But I like that tip, and so definitely you need to have it so it stays in manageable size that you can move it easily.
Yeah, and they make little platforms with wheels on them that you can put underneath your pot. So if it's on a deck or a patio or someplace, you can just roll it under a roof and keep it out. If it's on a peach, this year has been terrible for peach leaf.
Yeah, I wondered if the rule of keeping them out under cover until, say, February and then putting them out. That may not have done it this year.
No, you actually want to keep them under cover whenever it's raining.
Anytime
it's raining. And, this year that would be now still. Yeah, we've had a lot of calls.
Roll them out Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, and it's been so, rain one day, sunny the next. So you'd be kind of...
It'd be fine if it was rain one day, sunny 4 or 5 days, and then rain again.
No,
that'd be nice
we're not
all
that
along.
Lucky.
But
I think you could make a cute little railroad in your backyard.
I was just thinking that. little pulley system. Conveyor belts.
Yeah, sure.
Well, we haven't ignored vegetables completely, and because we can grow vegetables and some vegetables in pots too, and they're probably a heck of a lot easier than the fruit type. But we'll take our last musical break and come back with that. Glenn Andreessen with Lisa Alpert and Jim Gilbert. Singer, songwriter, guitarist, Deborah Coleman there. Loves Like Rain.
Hmm. You know a lot more about music than I do, Glenn.
I know a lot more about rain, huh? Than love, huh? Is that what you're... All right. We've been having a discussion here about the art versus science of gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite a discussion here. And apparently some of our listeners have chimed in on or have given us their opinion on that too, and we agree with all of them, whether it's a science or an art, and we're all in agreement here that gardening is or can be science-based or is science-based.
It is science-based.
The things that goes on in that the aspects of it, but Lisa's comment, or what was your comment?
It may have been a little flippant, but there is not necessarily one exact way to do everything. There are so many variations, and you mentioned if you talk to five beekeepers, but if you talk to five different people who grow vegetables or grow fruits or whatever, they're going to have five different ways of doing it, and it's all successful.
Yeah, why would we have garden tours otherwise?
Exactly.
Just see one. And that's interesting that way. But we don't want to give the impression that we're selling snake oil or something like that.
There are basic principles that,
yes.
that apply.
Right, that you cannot ignore. Okay. Well, we got that straight. Anybody else wants to call us on that, that's fine. 231-8187 would be the number. Well, vegetables can be, of course, grown in pots. They have a much shorter lifespan than fruit. So, you know, you don't have to be quite as critical. But at the same time, you need to realize that you're not going to get perhaps the production from a tomato plant that's in a pot than would be in the ground. You just run out of room, or their roots may be hotter, mm-hmm. or they may dry out sooner, or something like that. So, but it can be done, certainly, with vegetables. Vern Nelson in a column a couple of months ago, and he was with us about a year ago. He says edibles well suited to containers include Alpine strawberries. These are small, mm-hmm. Very fragrant strawberry, very nice. And I would also say that just regular strawberries mm-hmm. would be Absolutely. Appropriate for pots. Arugula, basil, cilantro, and other herbs, lettuce. Hey, maybe somebody can tell us if it's pronounced mosh or
Ooh,
mache.
Should have made that the quiz.
Yes. Oh, forget what we just said. Then. No, yeah, no. If you know that we would like that. He also suggests peppers and spinach and tomatoes. Those are what he recommends. I don't know about root crops in pots. You know, beets, things like that. Potatoes are oftentimes grown in
pillars.
Yeah, so I suspect that they could.
If someone goes to Fresh Dirt Sunset's blog, there is down in their test gardens. They're actually doing them in columns, and they're doing updates on the progress of it. So I don't think there is it almost looks like it's just a dirt column with bamboo fencing around it.
Uh-huh.
And they're just filling in. I thought that was kind of an interesting little experiment.
Before we go to the our first caller, I want to ask if you have any information as to the attractiveness of growing tomatoes upside down. Have you heard about this, Jim?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, what is it? You got your finger on the pulse of Gardening America.
Oh, me? Oh, goodness. Well, we actually were talking about this a little bit. Kim and I were talking about this a little bit. Kim Picorni from the Oregonian, and her sister grew them this way. And I kind of thought that the tomatoes would fall out, that they'd be so heavy. But apparently, Kim's sister had success with it. So
does she not have success just putting them in the ground?
That I don't know.
Don't
know. I know that she did try it. It sort of seems a little novelty, but...
Yeah. I mean, if you're having a major slug problem, maybe that was another thing, but tomatoes aren't necessarily a big tomato.
If you're, again, on a small piece of, you know, property and you have hanging space but not ground space, you know, there are...
Okay, I'll give it up for you.
I'm not trying to, you know, sell them.
Think, boy, these people have a lot more time on their hands than
I
do. I'd rather let nature do the gardening for you.
I'm with you there, too.
But your point is valid that if you don't have the space, mm-hmm. then that could work. Mm-hmm. Okay, Kurt, who do we have here? Rob, talk to us.
Yeah, I've been growing tomatoes since forever.
Ooh.
They're easy to grow, and I just buy a small potted tomato and put it in the ground, and usually don't do much of anything as far as fertilizing. I'll plant them in compost or something like that.
Well, that's good fertilizer.
Yeah.
Nutrients.
I was told, though, that compost doesn't have enough or any nitrogen.
Well, it's all dependent on the inputs, the stock that you use. But generally, it wouldn't be considered technically a fertilizer, which would give you a nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium reading on it.
Yeah,
but it can have maybe up to 2-4%, just depending on what you're using in there.
Yeah. So I thought that, maybe I should get some kind of, you know, get some fertilizer. I don't want to use any kind of chemical fertilizer.
Right. And I would caution you against maybe using really any fertilizer that has a lot of nitrogen in it, because okay. that would encourage growth, tomato plant growth, at the expense of fruit. You know, you don't care if your tomato plants are 5 feet tall or 8 feet tall, as long as you get the fruit production.
So if I don't add nitrogen, that, you know, they should do okay then?
Well, if you're using compost, is it homemade compost?
Yeah. I bought some.
Okay.
Because I don't have an awful lot yet.
Well, the stuff you buy is not nearly as nutrient-rich as what you make yourself.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. And if you had access to somebody that's growing chickens or raising chickens or rabbits or something like that, and they have a little bit of composted manure, that, I would argue, might be all the nitrogen you need for tomatoes.
Okay. So the so-called organic fertilizer that, you know, Fred Meyer sells, does that, is that truly organic, or does it have additives or chemicals?
Well, look for it. It needs to be certified organic.
Okay.
And either, usually it'll have the OMRI approval seal on there, the Organic Materials Review Institute. And if it's, if it has that, then it's, I have pretty good confidence in the, in that organization and all of the reviewing institutes like Oregon Tilth.
Okay. Let's
let Jim have a.
I just wanted to mention that there's a difference between organic in the sense that the products are produced organically, or if they are considered to be acceptable to organic gardening, like, for example, blood meal or, you know, the chicken fertilizer and stuff. They, those chickens are obviously probably not grown organically themselves.
That's another concern. You know, I don't want to buy something that, that has something from an animal that's mistreated.
Right. Well, there are other certifying organizations for that.
Okay.
But look for those.
My tomato plants aren't doing too well right now, and is that due to all the rain and lack of sunshine?
Could be. Although I have to say mine are looking pretty good.
Really?
No protection.
Okay, well.
But I think a lot of our problems will go away on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, I hope so.
After the Rose Festival parade.
Yeah, right.
Okay, well, thanks
great.
A lot.
You bet. Okay, no one else. All right, so other vegetables that come to your mind? I mean, would we try corn in a pot, you know?
Ooh, that's well, going to be a...
For one, corn would, it might not be pollinated very well.
No.
So that's probably not appropriate for that. Another thing that if you're planting vegetables and fruit, you should also reserve some place to plant flowers that attract mm-hmm. beneficial insects and have a more complex ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Just because we're on the porch doesn't mean pests aren't going to find it.
Absolutely, bringing in the pollinators and the aphid eaters and all that would be a fabulous way to do it.
And it would make your...
It looks pretty.
Right. Your experience out on your patio or... whatever it is that you have.
Sure. And another thing, you can also grow vines in pots. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, yeah. You know, good idea.
So that you can have a pot with a kiwi or a grape growing up over your trellis.
So you would say even kiwis that put on so much growth?
Well, you know, you can. I mean, we do it. But the Arctic Beauty Kiwi, which is that one that likes shade and it's really pretty, beautiful foliage, it's not so vigorous. So certainly a good candidate for a pot. It, you would have less issues with getting too big. But you can do it. You can grow the fuzzy kiwi. It's just going to take, you know.
A big pot, maybe?
A big pot, yeah.
Okay.
One of the things with growing flowers at the base of some of these plants, especially if they trill over the pot, is then in summer they're going to help protect that pot from getting so baked by the sun, which protects the roots. So there are other reasons to put plants in those pots as well as just for pretty.
Good point.
All right. Well, any final words?
Well, I just thought I'd mention that one place to get stuff that we like for a whole lot of different materials. I mean, a lot of garden centers and stores sell some of the materials we've talked about, but I particularly like concentrates down on Southeast 8th between Division and Powell. They've got a great list of things, and they sell both sort of wholesale, I mean, big scale or small scale to folks. And
they sell in bulk. And I don't mean bulk bins. They just sell in 50-pound bags.
They have 50-pound bags, but they've also got 4-pound boxes, too. So they've
they do?
Yeah. So they're they've moved more to that retail type thing.
I've been there many times, but haven't paid too much attention to that.
Yeah. So That's so important to know, you know, where you can get the stuff.
Yeah,
so,
and you can get potting soil there too.
That's right,
as well. So,
I guess my last bit is just to give a plug to the OSU Master Gardener program. I am a Master Gardener, and they're free service for questions. And just let them know you're looking for organic information.
Yeah, push them.
Push them. They right. are much more so than when I went through in 96.
And me too, in 91. Yeah. Lisa, Albert, thank you very much
for coming. This has been great.
Jim, we'll see you next month.
In July, when it's sunny and hot.
Yeah,
we'll complain about it.
That's right, we will.
Thanks for listening to The Dirt Bag. This is Glenn Andreessen. Be well.